the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois. This is the closing market report. It is the 28th day of October 2010. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group. He's in Decatur, Illinois. In agricultural news, the rising price of fertilizer has prompted a big jump in Potash Corp's third quarter earnings statement. The government of Canada is leaning more heavily toward not selling the company. And Moody's claims investors are hoarding a pile of cash, waiting for just the right moment, sometime when they feel safer, to invest it. We'll have details of these and other stories shortly. Also in this half hour, we'll hear the latest in my backyard segment from Lisa Braltz and from meteorologist Pete Levitt. It all happens on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report. It is a production of the University of Illinois.
Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
In Chicago on this Thursday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. December wheat up 15.5 cents, $7.18 and a quarter. The settlement price, the March at 7.58, 16.5 higher, and July at 7.86, 15.75 cents higher. December corn futures, $5.79, up a penny and three quarters. The March at 5.92, up 1.75. And May corn at 5.98 and a quarter, up 2.25. July contract, $6.02, up 2.25. Next year's December at 5.43, up 3.25. November beans at $12.25, a penny and a quarter higher. January unchanged at 12.36. The March at 12.40 and a half, down 1.5. And July beans at 12.42 and a half, down 2.75. Next year's November 2.25 lower at $11.75. December bean meal up 40 cents at $3.36.30. December bean oil $49.70, up 10 for the day. And mercantile exchange numbers: October live cattle futures $100.70, up 20 cents. December at 99.27 and a half, down 72 and a half. October feeders at 110.92 and a half, down 37 and a half cents. And November's at 110.95, down 60 on the afternoon. December lean hog futures at $67.05. That's $67.05, down 80. The February futures at $72.90, down 90 cents on this Tuesday afternoon. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. Please do visit our website. The address is willag.org. That's willag.org. There you'll find all of our agricultural programming. It's free, and you can listen to it 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Let's take a look at the outside markets at this hour. Futures in the crude oil at $82.16 for up 22 cents. The ethanol at $2.32, that's up 2.5 cents on the day. Natural gas at $3.91 and 4 cents, 15 and 2 tenths higher. The heating oil at $2.24 and 4 cents, up just about 6 tenths of a cent. Gold futures at $1,342.10, up $19.90. The Dow Jones Industrial Average now down just about 20 points at 11,105. The U.S. dollar trading at 77.3 is down 0.84, and the CRB at 299.89 is up 0.75 on the afternoon. Here's what the weather forecast looks like for the two-state region as it comes from the National Weather Service. They say this afternoon, skies should remain sunny in the Urbana-Champaign area. West-northwest winds around 17 miles an hour with a high today of just 48 degrees. And those gusting winds will hit 24 miles an hour today. Clear tonight, a low of 28, northwest winds between 6 and 10, and tomorrow should be sunny, a high near 54, northwest winds between 5 and 7. Friday night, mostly clear skies, a low of 34, south-southwest winds between 7 and 9, and Saturday it'll be a sunny day, a high near 64 degrees. Southwest winds between 10 and 13, they'll gust up to 16. Saturday night, mostly clear, a low of 40, Sunday mostly sunny, a high near 62 degrees. The extended forecast says it'll be partly cloudy Sunday evening, a low of 42. Monday, partly sunny, a high near 57. Monday night, mostly clear, a low of 38. Tuesday, sunny, the high of 56. Tuesday night, partly cloudy, a low of 36 degrees. And by the time we get to Wednesday of next week, should be partly sunny, a high near 50 degrees. More on the ag weather when we get to the bottom of this half hour and we talk with ag meteorologist Pete Levitt.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on a Thursday afternoon. Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group joins us from his office in Decatur, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Dan.
Hi, Todd.
Well, it's been a wild and woolly fall here in the Midwest, and it's a good one for producers to get the crop out, but they've been watching this marketplace, I think, sometimes in awe as it has continued to go higher. And sometimes they've wondered why it's gone higher. Sometimes they've thought, well, my crop isn't that good, and they believed it should go higher. Where do you stand today? And what? It just is a very odd and unusual marketplace, it seems to me.
Well, as I mentioned before, basically since the January crop report way back when, the market had worked pretty much counter-seasonal. It had declined through the spring when the markets usually rally, and a lot of times the market rallies right on into June or until the crop is made. You make your seasonal high, and then you basically decline into October for an harvest low. This year, the market basically declined into a summer low, a late June low, when we normally make season highs, and then it rallied pretty much all through the summer and into the fall. Now, looking at those seasonals, it looks to me like the October crop report was the shock that put the market back into a seasonal pattern. So now the market is kind of like swimming downstream. It has been swimming upstream all year. Now it's swimming downstream. So I think that is why we've had such strong strength basically since the October crop report. Now, that big run-up, this is the end of the month, so a lot of times the market kind of goes opposite or shows weakness if the market's been up in the last few days of the month, and the opposite if it's the other case. So I think we have seen some liquidation here on the strength that we've seen over the past few days, and we're going to, I think, you know, we'll finish out the month here tomorrow fairly quiet, and then we'll take a look at what the new month brings next week.
Yeah, didn't I actually take a look at the monthly charts? Where do we stand on those? And we have just a day and a half left.
Oh, we're up for the month. There is, you know, we're strong up for the month because of the October crop report. We made an early October low in all of this stuff, corn, soybeans, and wheat. And then, of course, the October crop report just shocked everything to go sharply higher. So for the most part, we're we're going to close out the month higher, up at the top end of the range, and that kind of tees up the market then for it to try to continue as we go on into November.
Here we are in the December contract. What did we settle at? 579 today, right?
And right.
We have a 588 top in the right marketplace. We're not too far away. Will they make a push for that tonight and tomorrow?
I don't think so. I think if we make a push for that, it's going to be early next week, unless something happens overnight that I'm not aware of. The dollar is kind of a driving force in here. The dollar, I think, is in. It did find support along that long-term trend line here a couple of weeks ago. Had a nice little rally here. Now the rally seems to be fading, being down sharply here today. I think the traders will keep an eye whether or not the dollar can hold above this trend line. If that 76.14 low that we had here a couple weeks ago gives way, I think it opens up the gates then for a challenge of those 08 lows, which are down there slightly above the 70 level.
So if we have changed now and we're in a seasonal move, that would mean that we're in an uptrend again, but, mm-hmm. and we're supposed to be, as usual.
Well, we've never really fallen out of the uptrend. It's just that
that's right.
Now the seasonal influences are with the uptrend right now.
And when would that uptrend sort of begin to go into the winter blahs?
Well, corn really doesn't have a strong, the strong up in corn really doesn't kick in until about the first part of December.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the up in beans is well in place. Year in and year out, beans have a bottom during the first 10 days or so of October, and then climb higher as we go really right on into the growing season. A lot of times you will get a pause in the February time frame because you get a lot of country movement at that time. Farmers move grain to town to generate cash flow for the spring. So you do get some pause at that point from a seasonal perspective. But the overall trend usually stays higher as you go on into the growing season.
Your expectation is that this is where we're at and that this is what will happen as we move through?
Well, I think on the corn market, something's going to have to blink in the corn market. There is going to be a need for some supply rationing in corn. If we don't see the move up sharply higher here this fall to slow that demand, then I think that lays the groundwork for an explosive situation probably as you go into the second half of the marketing year, and then that will be fueled by worries or concerns about the 2011 crop.
But that tells me that either USDA has the demand numbers wrong or they have the production number wrong, or both. Which one is it?
Well, the thing about the supply-demand balance sheets, I mean, the guys try to give the best idea what they think demand, how supply is going to be distributed, and this is what the carryover is going to be. And they may be right at the end of the day, but in the meantime, demand is much stronger than what USDA has on the balance sheet. So there's going to have to be some kind of rationing take hold at some point here in this corn market in order to get to USDA's balance sheet. And then, of course, the supply. I mean, you don't have to talk to very many people throughout the Midwest. You can talk to elevator after elevator after elevator, and you know, corn receipts are down anywhere from 20% to 35%. So you know that the corn crop is real short, corn is going to be there's going to have to be a rationing process at some point in time.
All right. So does the rationing process, let's see, $6 probably doesn't do it. $6.20, $6.30, $6.40?
I don't know. We'll find out. I mean, the short term here, the market feels a little heavy. We may roll down here for a little correction, but most of your chartists, I think, are still kind of looking something up into that 6.40, give or take a dime or 15 cents as an upside for starters. Then, you know, we'll go from there and see what happens at $6.
Any final word before I let you go?
That's about all I have, Todd.
Hey, thanks so much.
You're very well.
Dan Zwicker is with ADM Grain Group. He's out of Decatur, Illinois. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report. That happens each and every Thursday afternoon. Be sure to visit our website. The address is willag.org. That's willag.org.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
You can always visit willag.org to hear what Dan had to say again and download directly to your computer via podcast these programs, the Closing Market Report, Commodity Week, the pre-opening and the opening market reports. Most of our reports is podcast, or you can listen to them directly off of our website. Don't forget to sign up for our weekend newsletter. It's a really good newsletter. It's free over on the right-hand side of the page. And you can check our Ag Panel Outlook schedule under the calendar level. That's all at willag.org. Dave Dickey will be here in a moment. He'll have all the agricultural news for the afternoon.
In agricultural news, Potash Corporation posted a 62% rise in quarterly earnings today. far surpassing forecasts as a run-up in grain prices spurred robust demand for fertilizer. The Canadian company, which is resisting a $39 billion hostile takeover bid from BHP, also issued strong full-year earnings forecasts for 2010 and 2011 that are well above of Wall Street's previous expectations. It also says that it expects demand for potash or potassium-based fertilizers to rise by as much as 20% next year. Third quarter net income rose to $402.7 million, or $1.32 a share, from $247.9 million, or 82 cents a share a year earlier. The company forecast 2010 earnings in the range of $5.75 to $6 a share. Meanwhile, Ottawa is increasingly growing skeptical of BHP's hostile takeover attempt. Canadian Industry Minister Tony Clement is scheduled to decide by November 3rd whether to allow the bid to proceed. Clement appears to be swayed by Saskatchewan Premier Brad Wall's argument that potash is of strategic importance to Canada. Moody Investor Services says U.S. companies are sitting on a pile of cash that totals nearly $1 trillion. Moody says that companies are holding onto the cash because they are looking for greater certainty about the economy and signs of a permanent increase in sales before they let go of their cash hoards. For the 19th consecutive year, the UN General Assembly has approved a non-binding resolution calling on the U.S. to drop its economic embargo of Cuba. The recent vote in the 192-member UN General Assembly was 187-2. The U.S. and Israel were the only countries opposing. Privately owned Poet, the largest U.S. ethanol maker, says it will ask the Agriculture Department to list three of its plants as biomass conversion facilities. Approval would allow matching payments of up to $45 per dry ton to farmers for gathering and hauling cellulosic feedstocks to the plants. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media. That's public radio for the farming world. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week. Hey, please do visit our website. The address is willag.org. That's willag.org. Up next, Lisa Brault's and In My Backyard.
Support for today's broadcast comes from Common Ground Food Co-op in Lincoln Square Mall. Community-owned since 1974, Common Ground is a full-service grocer featuring locally grown and organic foods, as well as homemade healthy deli meals. More information is available at 352-3347 or at the co-op.
Hi, this is Illinois Public Media Director of Agricultural Programming, Dave Dickey. Coming up next, the leaves may be falling and Halloween may be just around the corner, but some East Central Illinois residents are still enjoying fresh, just-picked produce. Lisa Brautz takes a walk through a time tunnel that extends the growing season in her latest edition of In My Backyard.
I don't know about you guys, but garden season's over at my house. Actually, it has been for a while, since July sometime. When the heat came and our climate completely dried out, I gave up. We still fish lots of tomatoes and peppers and basil out of the garden, and even some potatoes, but all the big plans I had for extending the season, you know, planting stuff in late summer for fall harvest, yeah, no, it didn't happen. The thing is, I love fresh local produce. I love it. I'm just not able some years to get my act together and make it happen in my own garden once the end of summer arrives. But some people can make it happen so that those of us who don't have the chops, the time, or the inclination to extend the garden season at home can eat fresh food into the winter months, a time traditionally seen as devoid of fresh food altogether around here. Many small farms are starting to use high tunnels to extend the growing season due to increased consumer demand for fresh, local, or regional produce year-round. These tunnels, which are more DIY-style greenhouses using plastic instead of glass, have seen wider use overseas and in the northeastern United States. They didn't gain much traction in our part of the country until the last 10 years or so, and they're becoming increasingly popular in our part of the Midwest. Farmers grow everything from tomatoes to carrots to fruit trees in them. They're pretty cool. If you live in Urbana-Champaign, you can see some high tunnels in action. Just head to the University of Illinois Sustainable Student Farm, just south of campus on Windsor Road at Lincoln Avenue. It's almost November, okay, and the farm's manager and my neighbor, Zach Grant, is keeping a watchful eye on a tunnel full of his specialty. Gorgeous salad greens like lettuces, baby kale, spinach, and others.
So like the tunnel we're in right now, like these salad greens, this is some of our first stuff we're going to be harvesting. But the idea with salad green crops like this is that normally they grow really quickly. Like say in the spring, you know, 30 days, you can harvest them. Most of them, you can probably get a second or third harvest off of them, but you're working against the increasing day length and their photo period wanting to cause them to flower. In the winter, though, and when you move into the fall and the winter, that kind of is reversed. So they're not thinking that they're having a flower, so you can cut them back. They'll continue to put on vegetative growth. So hopefully how it'll work is, you know, we'll be able to continuously harvest from these beds throughout the winter months, probably 2 to 3 times from each one of these beds. And I have the plantings in each one of the tunnels sort of staggered. So hopefully I'll have a continuous supply, probably hopefully through February.
The Sustainable Student Farm came together in winter 2009 as a joint effort between some university faculty, the university's dining services, and the Student Sustainability Committee. 90% of the food grown at the farm goes to dining services for use in dining halls, an average of over 15,000 pounds of produce over 2 years. And the other 10% is grown for their Thursday farm stand on Anniversary Plaza at the Union and possibly for a future small community-supported agriculture or CSA venture. Zach foresees the farm increasing its production for the dining halls, eventually becoming a teaching farm and vehicle for extension outreach, and growing into an overall community resource. Yes, you're saying, speaking of community resources, what about me, the home grower? How do I extend my season at home? You can go the cold frame route, which could be spendy, or you can build your own modified high tunnel.
You can essentially, you can go to Menards and you could buy like a half inch conduit, like electrical conduit and a pipe bender. And you can essentially bend sort of like hoops to sort of replicate one of these larger high tunnels and attach, fix them to a wooden frame, like a raised bed box or something like that, and with on hinges or something like that, with something to prop it open. And essentially you can create a small scale high tunnel over a wooden frame like that.
Take a look around this fall and early winter. You might see local produce through the holidays and beyond, whether it's in a high tunnel on campus, at your local grocery store, or in a cold frame in your own backyard.
Lisa Broth's stories can also be heard on our website, WILLAG.org. Click on the In My Backyard link in the right navigation window. And you can also read her occasional blogs at majorprogression.wordpress.com.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is available at www.stuart-peterson.com.
You're listening to The Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'll return in just a couple of minutes when we'll talk with Pete Levitt, agricultural meteorologist, about the weather.
It's National Chocolate Day. It's also Feast of Simon the Apostle, patron of sawmen and tanners. On this day in agricultural history in 1793, Eli Whitney applied for a patent for his cotton gin. Long staple cotton, which was easy to separate from its seeds, could only be grown along the coast. The one variety that grew inland had sticky green seeds that were time-consuming to pick out of the fluffy white cotton balls. Whitney solved the problem, but he charged farmers a fee for the ginning, two-fifths of the profits paid in cotton. That exorbitant rate caused planters to come up with their own versions of Whitney's gin and claimed they were new inventions. Whitney sued owners of the pirated versions, but due to a loophole in the wording of the 1793 patent law, he lost. It would be years before a change in patent laws made his claims of piracy enforceable. But by then, it was too late for Whitney to make much money off the device. In 1886, the Statue of Liberty was officially unveiled and dedicated in New York Harbor. And in 1916, Cleveland Abbey died. Abbey was an astronomer and meteorologist and is considered the father of the U.S. Weather Bureau. The Weather Bureau was authorized by Congress in 1870. The Bureau was originally placed under the Secretary of War and later the Department of Agriculture. And that's this day in agricultural history.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media and the Urbana-Champaign campus of the U of I. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. On the phone line with us today to talk about the agricultural weather is Pete Levitt. Good afternoon to you, Pete.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Well, tell me to begin with your assessment of this big windstorm that we had in the Midwest and what it was like and how it compared over the years to other events.
Well, it was one of the major winter were actually late autumn storm systems in the past. The ranking that I've seen that's probably closest is it's probably the second strongest storm of this type this time of year in the last 50 or 60 years or so. The last memorable one that had a similar course in November 10th, 1975, was responsible for the sinking of an ore ship in the Great Lakes, the Edmund Fitzgerald, about which is legendary now, almost in folk songs and the like. It was a similar storm. This one occurred a little bit farther west. This one had a little bit more snow with it, mostly in the Dakotas, Minnesota, and those areas. And the area of strong winds was exceptionally large. The lowest pressure was down around 960 millibars. I might say lower than almost all the tropical storms we've seen this year. But being an extratropical storm, it was very broad in scope. Quite a windstorm. We're still seeing some of the winds from it and the cold air today, but those are going to die out rapidly, and tonight we're going to see the cold end of it here. Temperatures are going to get down below freezing just about statewide in Illinois tonight, and we'll see some low readings before sunrise in the 20s, most of northern and central Illinois. The reason for that is that the clouds will clear out, the winds will die pretty quickly late this evening, and probably in the early morning hours we might actually get some periods of nearly calm conditions with this cold air mass, and it'll be quite a chilly night and a real hard freeze for most of Illinois, eastern Iowa, western Indiana, northeastern Missouri.
It appears that this is the only night that we'll get the hard freeze, and then we'll warm back up just a bit.
Oh, it's going to bounce back very quickly. We've got fast-moving weather systems. The wind is also responsible for a rapid motion of weather systems. We're going to have one coming in the west coast tomorrow that's actually going to go right past Illinois on Sunday, and there's so little moisture we'll have an opportunity to get up in front of it that there'll just be maybe some cloudiness and a few sprinkles. But what it means is that the temperatures will bounce around. We'll be running about 8 to 10 degrees below normal tonight and tomorrow. They'll be back to normal on Sunday with high temperatures getting well up in the 50s, for example. And then this thing goes by and it cools off again. We get a little bit below normal. Mostly the low temperatures will be back in the 30s through most of next week, but probably stay out of the freezing area, mostly just above freezing. And the daytime max is in the 50s. And one more note, it looks like the weather on November 2nd, an important day for people interested in getting out and about, looks pretty much fair nationwide, except for the lower Mississippi Valley, the Delta region. There'll be some showers down there. It'll be cool. Temperatures will be in the 50s, upper 40s to 50s across much of the Midwest, but no impediment for getting outdoors on next Tuesday.
The weather should not keep you from voting. I agree. Thanks so much.
Okay. My pleasure.
Pete Leavitt, agricultural meteorologist, joins us here on the Closing Market Report on a Thursday afternoon. Thanks for being with us. If you'd like to hear it again, you can do that online at willag.org. That's W-I-L-L-A-G.org. You have a great afternoon.